tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 19th of May, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I'd like to take a look at immigration, and a wider look at immigration, not just looking at the problems that it causes from within Britain, but particularly in America as well. And I have to admit, the Trump administration have been very good about highlighting the problems that are caused by mass migration. And last week, or the week before, we had some very good comments that were being put out by the State Department. And this article comes from Breitbart. State Department trashes UN Migration Pact and promises re-migration. Now, long-time listeners probably heard that term, the UN Migration Pact, before. I think it was probably about 2017. The UN put out this pact that they wanted everybody to join. And in it, the countries promised to facilitate more migration, to facilitate legal and safe routes for any migrants to come into their countries. And they also called for the countries to expand their hate speech legislation to include immigration status as a protected characteristic. Now, protected characteristics are things like race, religion, sexuality, gender. They're all things that are a part of a person that the reasoning given is that if you are calling these people names, using slurs against them, that dehumanizes them. That means that people are going to be more likely to use violence against them. That's not an argument that I think holds up to scrutiny, but that is the argument that is put there. The reason why we have these protected characteristics is to prevent these people from being attacked. If you then go and make immigration status a protected characteristic, immigration is a government policy. It's not a characteristic of a person. It's a government policy. So they're saying, all of these countries that signed up to it, they're saying, well, we will put it into law to make it illegal to criticize our country's immigration policy. And it was absolutely scandalous. We had Theresa May, who was in office at the time. She just signed up to it without any question. She signed up to doing this. America refused to sign it, and Hungary refused to sign it. I think probably Poland refused to sign it as well. And I think Theresa May was taken to task on this, and it was said, look, you know, this expanding hate crime legislation to include immigration status is, you know, this is not something that should be done because of the effect that it would have on being critical of government immigration policy. And what was said at the time was, oh, well, this isn't legally binding. But it's a promise to put this into law, isn't it? Taking part in this pact was effectively promising that at some point over the next 20 years, you will put all these things into process. So you would have opening up these routes and allowing more migrants in, and you would have the banning of criticism of immigration. So it was an absolutely scandalous pact that these countries signed up to, and America refused to sign up to it. So I'm pleased to see that they are still criticizing this act now, obviously 8 years on, I guess it must be. Marco Rubio's Department of State is trashing a globalized pro-migration scheme by the United Nations and is promising to help migrants' remigration back home. I'm always interested in the word scheme. It means an underhand plan. That's what a scheme is. It's an underhand plan. So the United Nations are admitting, really, that that's what they have here. The United States objects to the Global Compact on Migration and United Nations efforts to facilitate replacement migration to the United States and our Western allies, said a May 11th tweet from the Department of State. Another interesting thing about this is the fact that he's using the word replacement migration. Weren't we told that the Great Replacement was all a conspiracy theory, and it's only crazy, whacked out conspiracy theory nut jobs that talk about replacement migration? Well, the word replacement migration, well, the two words, actually comes from the UN itself. They put out a policy paper some years ago, it's probably over 10 years ago now, and they talked about replacement migration, and they said because Europeans are not producing enough children to replace themselves, what we need to do, because we've got far too many people in Africa, they can't sustain themselves, we need to replace the white babies that aren't being born with black adults from Africa so that the economy will still function. And they referred to it as replacement migration. And but then since then, of course, we talk about the Great Replacement, which is this replacement that we see going on around us where all the white people are being replaced by non-white people. And we're told it's all just in our heads and it's all a conspiracy theory. So it is good to see that Marco Rubio is using this term, replacement migration, and that they are rejecting it. The tweet from the Department of State added, "For the citizens of Western nations, mass migration was never safe. It introduced new security threats, imposed financial strains, and undermined the cohesion of our societies. Under President Trump, the State Department will facilitate re-migration, not replacement migration." And that is a very good thing for the State Department to say. And interesting where it says here about the mass migration was never safe. And that's because this UN Compact for Migration states that these countries pledge to provide safe and easy routes for migration into these countries. So they're saying there that mass migration has never been safe. It introduces a huge security threat. There's no mention there, of course, about the number of girls that end up being raped. I mean, that's horrendous. Annunziata Rees-Mogg, Jacob Rees-Mogg's sister, put out a tweet last week, and in it, it had the figures produced by the Dorset Police, and it was the sexual assault numbers for illegal immigrants that were staying in the hotels, and 45% of all the sexual assaults that take place in Dorset were carried out by something like 0.05% of the population there, which was the illegal immigrants. And if you look at that and you look at the numbers and you divide the 45% by the 0.0 whatever it was, and it tells you that these illegal immigrants are 550 times more likely to carry out sexual assaults than their percentage of the population or any normal person. I mean, if you look at white people, I think we make up probably 75% or 74% of sexual assaults, but we make up 75% of the population. If you look at illegal immigrants, they are 550 times more likely to carry out sexual assaults than the indigenous British people are. So that is absolutely an absolutely horrendous figure. And I don't think Annunziata Rees-Mogg would be putting out false figures. And she got these figures from the police. So, I mean, to make this comment even better, it would have been if Marco Rubio had also criticised the sexual assaults that are associated with this. But I guess that could come under security threats. But I'm assuming by what they mean by security threats is the terrorism that it also facilitates. But it's certainly not safe and it's certainly not welcomed, and nobody ever voted for it. The rejection of mass migration is a big shift from President Joe Biden's term, when his deputies carefully and covertly worked with the United Nations. Together, they moved almost 10 million culturally distant migrants into Americans' neighborhoods, workplaces, aid programs, schools, hospitals, jails, and politics. And this is obviously what's going on in Britain as well. These illegal immigrants that will be coming into Britain, they will also be working with the UN, these NGOs that facilitate these people coming into Britain. They will have contacts at the UN, and they will see it that what they're doing is carrying out the United Nations bidding. And they think that they're doing a good thing by doing this. They think that they're helping these Africans out because they can't look after themselves in Africa. If we bring them to Britain, they'll be able to get jobs, they'll be able to work, it helps them out, it provides this workforce that we need in Britain, never mind the fact that with robotics and AI there isn't going to be any need for an actual workforce in the future. And they think that they're doing a good thing by doing this, and they think that when people point out the harmful effects of this, that they must just be racist or they must just be far right. That's why it's important that we actually have these figures, which we got from the Dorset Police. And to say that illegal immigrants are 550 times more likely to rape or sexually assault the indigenous British population, I mean, that's a horrendous number. I mean, it was bad enough before when it was said that Afghans and Eritreans are 20 times more likely to rape and sexually assault than the indigenous British folk are. And of course, that wasn't including exclusive to illegal immigrants, that was legal migrants as well as illegal immigrants. But if you look at specifically illegal immigrants, it's 550 times more likely to rape. Biden's elite-backed displacement migration killed many migrants and many Americans, flatlined the economy, and prompted Americans to elect Trump on a mandate to deport millions of migrants from their nation and society. Rubio's department continued. UN agencies systematically facilitated mass migration into America and Europe, even as citizens of these nations called for restrictions on migration. And even with America not signing this migration pact as well, and the UN still forced it upon them. This is why they were saying they were doing this covertly. Joe Biden was doing it covertly because America did not sign up to this compact. As the American people suffered under an unprecedented wave of mass migration, the United Nations was on the ground in Central America pipelining migrants to our southern border. And we know they were doing that in Central America. As I say, we have a suspicion that they're doing the same in Africa and funneling them to Libya and then sending them from Libya to Italy and from Turkey into Europe through Greece. And we know that these NGOs are facilitating it. And of course, these NGOs, they probably get grants from the United Nations, as well as grants from our own governments. UN officials greeted migrants along the route through the deadly Darien, where many migrants died. UN-funded NGOs handed out maps to migrants en route to the United States. And of course, we see the same thing with the migrants in Calais. They're being given details of what to do. Go out into the channel, phone this number, say it's an SOS and your vessel is in distress, and the British authorities will come and pick you up and they'll take you to Britain, and then they'll put you up in a hotel. And on top of that, they'll give you free access to local landmarks. That's another thing that's just come out today. These migrants are being given free tickets so that they can get into places like Alton Towers and London Bridge and all these other things that families struggle to afford to pay for their children to do, and these refugees are just being given them for free. After facilitating mass migration to the United States, UN agencies condemned the deportation of illegal immigrants. Breitbart News carefully covered these developments, including a 2024 meeting to create a Labour Neighbours scheme run by an alliance of progressives and corporate lobbyists. The scheme would have spiked stock values and impoverished millions of Americans by flying many migrants from South America into low-wage jobs throughout the United States and Europe. And this is what most people say this migration is about. It's about keeping the wages down low. It means that these rich capitalist bosses don't have to pay a decent wage for people because they can just import foreigners from the third world who will do the job for much less money. But I don't believe it is just that. I think it's more about the debt that these people will create. Because a lot of these people, when they come over here, they don't work anyway. They just go on benefits. I mean, we discussed last week about what's happening in Spain, where they just legalized a million or so illegal immigrants. And straight away, they overwhelmed the social welfare offices claiming to be vulnerable and needing housing and needing benefits. So they weren't going out to work straight away. They were going on benefits straight away. And if they do go on benefits, the government still has to find that money to pay them. And the government finds that money to pay them with its budget by raising bonds on the bond market. And it gets money from the banks to do that. And it has to be paid back to the banks, or at least the interest on it has to be paid back to the banks. And the people that are right at the top of the system are the people who run the banks. So what they're interested in, they're not so much interested in gross domestic product, but gross domestic debt. The more debt there is, the more those banks actually own, because the more debt there is, they see that as value. And whether somebody comes in and works or whether somebody goes on benefits, that money still has to come from somewhere. And of course, the only place it can come from is the bank. So that's the reason why we have this immigration. This is why people on the left will say, well, what about the economy? I mean, they mean we need these people to work, but it's wider than that. In order for the whole economy to work, we have to have more and more debt so that there is enough funds in circulation for people to use. Because when we take out a debt and the money is given to us, the interest is not given to us on top of that. And the only money that's in circulation is the money that's come through people taking out debts. So you can see from that that you have to have an increasingly exponentially inflating money supply in order to be able to pay back the interest and pay back the principal. Because when they loan you the money, they only loan you the principal. So where are you going to get that interest from? Well, that has to come out of the next person's debt, out of his money. And that's the way that it works. So they need more and more people, not just to keep the wages down low, but also to keep up the amount of funds that are circulating in the economy and to also keep up the amount of debt. Breitbart has also covered the vast white-collar migration from India and China that has pushed millions of American college graduates out of professional jobs since 1990. Rubio's rejection of the United Nations global scheme was posted just after the United Nations held its second International Migration Review Forum, where progressive groups lobbied for more funds and legal authority to manage even more grandiose migration programs. Migration is not a crisis. The crisis is the failure to manage it together, Antonio Guterres declared in March. So what he is saying is we need to facilitate this mass exodus from Africa and the Middle East into Europe. And then we can all handle it together, I guess, when the whole of Europe starts to look like Africa and America starts to look like Afghanistan. That will be us managing it together. Since the adoption of the Global Compact, many member states have taken important steps, expanding regular pathways, strengthening labour mobility initiatives, improving search and rescue, enhancing data systems, and supporting safe return and reintegration. States should promote migration by recognising migrants' qualifications, matching the skills of migrants with labour market needs, and reducing remittance costs, unlocking shared prosperity for countries of origin and destination alike. And this is the way that the people on the left look at it. They think that it's a benefit. They don't see the number of rapes and murders as being related to it at all. They seem to think, well, these rapes and murders would just happen anyway, I guess. If these Africans and Afghans weren't here, it would be white people that are doing the raping. And that was literally the argument that Sargon of Akkad used probably about 10 years ago now, longer than that, in 2014, when the scandal about the grooming gangs came out. His argument was that these girls would have still been raped anyway, but it would have been white men doing it. And I think that is the logic of most people on the left. I think Sargon has changed his opinion now, but that's what it was back then. States can make progress by confronting a toxic, that's anti-migration, narratives with evidence, truth and humanity, said the Portuguese-born pro-migration politician. Of course, that's Antony Guterres. And he's not really saying there what the other side of this migration pact was, which was that you can confront the anti-migration narrative just by locking up the people that are talking about these things and being critical of migration. Back in the United States, the State Department's social media messages noted that UN pro-migration programs also attacked Europe. As Europe endured sustained migratory pressure, UN officials staffed all ends of the Mediterranean migration route, from the coast of Libya to the shores of the Aegean to the islands of Greece. Then UN agencies condemned frontline states who refused to open their borders, such as Hungary. While the United Kingdom faced unprecedented illegal boat crossings, United Nations agencies condemned their plans for deportations. UN officials lobbied aviation regulators to prevent the deportation of migrants, an appalling violation of the UK's national sovereignty. And another thing we need to ask, though, is where do the United Nations get all their funding from to do all of this? And of course, they get their funding from the countries that are a part of it. So Britain and America are funding the UN, and in response, the UN facilitates all of this migration into the countries, which the people don't want. And it has to be because the banks do want this, and they won't allow any politicians to put a stop to it, because they'll do the same as they did to Liz Truss. And they'll say, oh, the market's got spooked, everybody's mortgages have gone up, everybody's pensions have gone down, and everybody calls for Liz Truss to be removed from office. And I mean, that is the biggest problem that there will be if we do get an anti-migration politician in and they start to make any changes to migration. We'll have all these problems with the economy, and the people might well end up turning against the politician. I mean, the root of the problem is the fact that we've allowed usury, and that's why we got to this situation where we have to have migration, but that's not admitted to by the politicians. There is also much evidence that the UN's pro-migration policies are wrecking the development of poor nations and societies by extracting their human resources for use by US investors. This post-1990 colonialization-like immigration policy has severely damaged nations such as Haiti and Nicaragua. And that used to be referred to as brain drain. And effectively, you attract all the brightest people from a third world nation and they come into your country, then they're not going to be in their own country building their own country up, are they? And you don't just get this problem in the third world, you also get this problem in parts of Europe, places like Bulgaria and Romania. They end up losing a lot of their really intelligent people because they know that they can earn more money in the West. The investors convert the migrations into Wall Street capital gains via low-wage jobs, low-end apartments, and the arbitrage of US welfare programs, such as cash aid delivered to poor people who subsequently buy groceries at major US grocery stores. You see, it helps to keep the economy going, even if they're not working, even if they're just on benefits. A March 2026 study reported that extraction migration has done little to help the migrants' home countries. Analysis suggests that on average, immigration has had a negative and statistically significant impact on contemporaneous gross domestic product growth across the Latin America and Caribbean region, while remittances only partially mitigate that effect. So the money that people send back, it doesn't make up for the fact that that country has lost all its best doctors, legal minds, businessmen, and they aren't there. It doesn't matter how many dollars get sent back. If you've lost all your people with a high IQ, then the country is going to look like a dung heap, to sanitize Donald Trump's famous term for third world countries. Even analysis of the impact of migration based on a growth accounting approach that allows for the stimulation of human capital in the origin country suggests that most economies see an income gain from migration only in the region of between 0 to 20%. And if you look at places like Somalia, I mean, that's only being kept alive by the amount of money that is sent back from America. I mean, that out outweighs the gross domestic product that's actually produced in Somalia. And most of them are on welfare in America. Well, the rest of the article is pretty much a puff piece for Donald Trump, and I don't really want to flatter Donald Trump any more than he already has been by us. But before we finish, I will take a look at another article here that is related to immigration. And what happens is when these immigrants come into our countries, and there's a large number of them, they will form their own community, and then they will effectively turn your country into their country. And the more of them you have, the more like their home countries your country is going to look like. And as was mentioned there, you've got a lot of Haitian refugees that end up in America. And all you have to do is take a look at Haiti to realize that the last thing you want is any number of Haitians in your country. This is another Breitbart article. Hundreds flee Haiti's capital. Hospitals shuttered amid surge of gang violence. Hundreds of refugees fled their homes in Haiti's capital of Port-au-Prince on Monday amidst a fresh wave of gang violence. The situation became so dangerous that hospitals shut down. Doctors Without Borders suspended humanitarian operations, and Prime Minister Alex Didier Fils-Aim suspended plans for the first presidential election in a decade. Haiti has been overrun by violent gangs ever since the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse in July 2021. The government controls only a small portion of Port-au-Prince, and gangsters have rampaged across the countryside to loot, murder, and rape rural citizens. It sounds like a country in Africa, doesn't it? Of course, it's a country in the Caribbean, but it is full of Africans. The International Organization for Migration found in October 2025 that over 1.4 million people have been displaced by the reign of gangland terror since Moise's assassination. About two-thirds of the displacements in late 2025 were people driven from their homes in rural areas rather than the capital city. And of course, left-wing people look at that and they say, oh, that's absolutely terrible. 1.4 million people have been displaced. We should open up our borders to them. We should help them in. Look, they've literally got nothing. These gangs are abusing them. They're torturing them. They're shooting them. We must let them into our countries to protect them. Of course, that's forgetting the fact that the people that are actually shooting them and torturing them and murdering them are part of the same ethnic group. So if you bring that ethnic group into your country, yes, you might protect them from being attacked by the ones that are attacking them. But as soon as there's any number of them in your country, the same things that are happening in Haiti now will be happening in your country. See, you can't have this knee-jerk reaction of, oh, we must help these people. They're being mistreated, because they are the ones doing the mistreating. And if you bring them into your country, they're going to end up mistreating your people in the same way that they're mistreating their own people. You have to look at this in terms of a group rather than individuals. Yes, I'm sure there must be Haitian individuals that are nice people that aren't likely to do this sort of thing. But if you look at the group itself, the group of the Haitian people over the years, this is what they've created, a war zone. And this is what they will create in your country if you have any numbers of them in your country. The Miami Herald reported on Monday that the latest surge of gang violence was sparked by a turf war between armed groups fighting for control of the Cité Soleil and Croix de Beaucoeur neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince. The fighting began in earnest on Sunday morning, and terrified civilians fled the area under cover of darkness on Sunday night. Doctors Without Borders said its staffers were forced to evacuate from their Cité Soleil hospital after being overwhelmed by gunshot victims and people seeking refuge. And again, the people that were seeking refuge are the same people that were shooting the guns. It's the same people, effectively. And some of them might be victims, some of them are perpetrators. But as you look at it as a group, massive amounts of violence follow them. In just 12 hours, our teams treated more than 40 people with gunshot wounds. One of our security guards was also struck by a stray bullet right inside the hospital compound, said MSF's head of mission for Haiti, Davina Hales. Several hundred inhabitants of Cité Soleil, as well as our colleagues and their families, have sought refuge in our hospital, having no other option to shelter from the gunfire, she added. Other hospitals in the area said they would suspend operations and evacuate patients due to the fighting. According to MSF, not a single hospital in City Soleil was functioning as of Monday. The other neighbourhoods that saw heavy fighting, Croix de Buquer, is located in an area known as the Cul-de-Sac Plain. Residents said the savage gang war was presaged by fires that were deliberately set to destroy the cane fields owned by the venerable Rum Barbancourt Distillery. So even the businessmen were not sheltered from this, and the farmers. The distillery and several other local businesses sent an urgent letter to the Prime Minister requesting police protection and calling for repairs to local roads, but there was no response, even after they warned that instability might completely shut down Toussaint-Louverture International Airport. You cannot support an airport if you allow the roads around it to degrade, the letter pointed out. Rum Barbancourt CEO Delphine Gardère on Monday posted a video of families fleeing the gang war, calling the scenes unbearable. Civilians are struck down by stray bullets, businesses are hit by gunfire, an entire area lives under terror, and this despite multiple notes, alerts and repeated requests concerning the cul-de-sac plain, she lamented. During the night, one of our employees was killed by gunfire, she exclaimed. How long will we have to count the dead before concrete actions are taken? Well, how long will it be in Europe and America before Europe and America start to look like this? Once it's a massive majority of black Africans, parts of our countries are going to look like this, aren't they? Observers told the Miami Herald that gang violence intensified after smaller gangs began banding together to challenge the bigger outfits for valuable territory. The delay of promised reinforcements for the UN's gang suppression force seems to have created an opportunity for gangs to grab what they could. Don't forget, in the last article, we were learning about how the UN is facilitating migration from all of these countries, and the UN is quite clearly in Haiti with its supposed gang suppression force, and they will be facilitating these people that carry out all these murders and attacks, not the direct individuals responsible for it, but individuals from that people group. The UN will be importing them into America. Another motivation for the surge of bloodshed might have been prolonging the state of anarchy by frightening the government out of holding elections. That gambit appeared successful on Monday, as Prime Minister Fili Zem said elections will be postponed by at least half a year. It is clear that these security conditions are not met at the level for us to have elections in August, he said. I would like for elections to happen by the end of the year. On February 7th, we would have an elected president, he said. Haiti's last presidential election was held in 2016, 10 years ago. The winner, Jovenel Moïse, postponed legislative elections in 2019, postponed the presidential election that was supposed to occur in February 2021, and was ruling by decree at the time of his death. I mean, this is absolute total anarchy in this country. And the UN wants to import the people that created this anarchy into America and Europe. As for the UN security mission, the last of the small contingent of Kenyan police deployed to Haiti departed on April 27th, and it was not clear where their replacements might come from or when they could arrive. Kenya originally pledged to send 1,000 police officers to Haiti, but wound up sending less than 800. Only $400 million of the $600 million budgeted for the mission materialized, most of it supplied by the United States. So $200 million has gone missing. The UN fielded complaints of sexual exploitation and other abuse by the Kenyan police, but their commanders denied all wrongdoing. The gangs remained firmly in control of much of Haiti during the deployment. So the Kenyan police, the black police, the same as the black Haitians, the same people group, they were accused of sexual exploitation and other abuse once they were out there. Is that really that surprising? If you've got the same ethnic group that is responsible for creating this chaos, you send the same ethnic group out there as police, and they're accused of causing the same chaos, effectively. The UN mission to Haiti supposedly entered a new phase with the departure of the Kenyans, with some 5,500 officers expected to be on the ground by October this year. But so far, only 400 personnel from Chad have arrived. And Chad is another African country. It's next door to Libya. The Chadians are not well known for their adherence to justice and protecting the weak and all the other things that the police are supposed to do. I can recall hearing of terrorism and all sorts of problems going on over in Chad, and it caused problems for Libya as well at some time. Chad has committed to send another 1,100 officers, but there is no indication when they would arrive and no word on where the other 4,000 will come from. And I'll make a prediction now that these Chadian officers will be accused of the same crimes that the Kenyan officers were accused of. And unfortunately, you're not going to be able to solve this problem. And this is just what happens, unfortunately, when you have black countries being ruled by black people. You end up with a situation like this. And if you end up with a black majority in Britain or America, that's what Britain and America are going to look like. If you bring Africans into your country, they will create Africa, because that's what they naturally do. That's what comes naturally to them, is creating the conditions that we see in Africa. Do we really want these conditions in Europe and America? I think we don't want these conditions. But unfortunately, we look at them, we look at the problems that they're in, and we think, well, if we just let them over here, then they wouldn't be being shot at, and we could get them to work, and we could try this and we could try that. But the end result is always going to be Haiti, effectively. What Haiti looks like, or what Somalia looks like. Unfortunately, we are better off leaving them in their own countries and helping them out where we can. Importing them into our countries is just causing hell for our own ethnic group. And also, as we learned earlier, you get the brain drain, and it means that the brightest people no longer stay in their own countries in order to rebuild them, and they're going to need them to rebuild them. They're going to need black intellectuals in Haiti, but I suspect a lot of them will have already left and will already be in America. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.